With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, I'm with Dimitri Toursounov, who beat the shit out of us French Davis Cup. What year was it?
I don't remember. 2006, maybe? Yeah. 2007?
You were on fire.
So many times I've done that.
You were on fire this weekend. Who did you play against?
I think I played Richard Gasquet. I only played one match. That was a five-setter. It was pretty tough. I remember I went into a full body cramp. I was trying to do recovery on a bike, and I sat down on the bike, and I went into a cramp, and then I just slid off the bike, and I sat, you know, with basically right between my legs, right on the, you know, on the frame of it. So,
whoa.
Yeah, and I was cramping, and I was also hit a couple of body parts that were very sensitive. So, it was a good memory for me.
Where was the game the weekend?
Pau,
in France.
Yeah. So, I think it's Pau, right?
That's it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I've checked your record. You were 7 in the world. You won 7 titles.
Seven titles, I think, in singles and doubles, and I know that not because I remembered it, but I just saw it in Wikipedia.
Same.
Yeah, when I was applying for a job, I was like, you know.
what's my resume again?
Yeah.
And you're now 39?
Yeah, I'm 39. I'll be 40 this year.
How long ago have you stopped?
I started 40 years ago.
No, stop your career.
Oh, so long stopped. So, I mean, 2014 was like a last year that I actually was playing consistently. And then after that, you know, I was on and off. I've just continued to have some injuries. And so 2017, basically ran out of my protected ranking. I tried to play a few challengers, kept getting injured there, so that's why I decided to stop in 2017. Actually, I wanted to continue, but then I went to a physio at a tournament, and they told me that, you know, you're gonna need to have a month of full medical rehab, and that's before you can even start training again. And I said, like, I can't do this anymore. I'm investing more into medical clinics than into myself. So
when I was following the circuit back in this time, I was pretty young when you stopped. For example, I was 14 years old, and I was hearing your name when the people were saying the craziest player on tour must be you and Mikhail Yodra. Who wins?
He does. There's no chance, because it doesn't matter what I do, he's gonna do it twice as hard. So if I jump with a parachute, he's gonna jump without a parachute. So it's like, it's impossible to beat him.
Were you friends?
We didn't hang out that much, but we're like very friendly, and I guess because friends is kind of a
big word.
It's a very broad word, we were very friendly with each other, but honestly I don't think I had enemies on tour. There's maybe like one or two guys that were a little odd for me, but for most part I was friendly enough with everyone.
What was the highlight of your career in terms of emotions? For you,
other than Mikhail Lodra, highlight. Honestly, you know, I wasn't super fanatical about tennis. I enjoy coaching a lot more than playing.
It was hard for you to be on tour. Excuse me.
In some ways, yes. I think towards the end of my career, I changed my approach to how I view tennis. How, you know, tennis is part of my life, but, you know, what place it has in my life, and And so, you know, I had a much better relationship with tennis in the second half of my career. So yeah, in some ways it's difficult, and I always enjoyed, I had many interests, so I think it's hard to just take care of just tennis, because if you truly professional, it takes so much of your time that you don't even have time to go to the bathroom sometimes. So I think it was a good experience. I think, I wasn't, you know, maybe like Rafa, I didn't enjoy it that much, but still, like, it gave me a lot of opportunities that I would have never had it not been for tennis, so I'm very thankful for that.
And how did you appreciate more the second part of your career? What was the turning point?
Well, I just stopped viewing wins or losses as direct, you know, kind of, if you win, you're a good person, and if you lose, you're a bad person. So I stopped looking at it that way, and I actually started enjoying the process of learning and discovering things in tennis. So for me, it became more of a, you know, kind of like I started having more passion in learning the game, not just winning. So the result was not as important. I mean, it was obviously important, but I also cared a lot about whether I'm improving or whether I'm learning something new or not, and that gave it a lot more, that became more fun to look at tennis this way on the court.
And was it because of a mental coach, or because you had enough money not to worry too much about that? What was the...
No, it's just, I don't know, I mean, you know, I guess you gather information as you go along, so, you know, I didn't have a psychologist. I think it's fashionable now to have a psychologist. I mean, you know, you lock yourself out of your car and you call a psychologist now. Like, you know, everything that, you know, something doesn't go the way you want to, and you go to a psychologist and you cry about it. So I think that's a lot more common now than before. But yeah, I think just you mature, you know, pick up information, you analyze what's happening in your life and what you're doing. And that was my journey. You know, in the first part of my career, I was so focused on having to win, and, you know, and thinking that winning is going to define me as a person. And then I slowly started caring more about becoming better as a player, because I realized that, okay, the results will follow that more. If I don't become a better tennis player, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to win matches. So yeah. I have to become a better tennis player first, and for that I need to learn and improve. So the improvement was a much bigger priority.
Back to the highlight you didn't tell us.
The highlight.
Emotional.
I don't know if I had one. I mean, you know, obviously winning Davis Cup was, but I didn't feel it, like, you know, in the moment you don't feel like you've achieved something special. I think you can reflect on it later on in life, but I've never, like, truly sort of felt euphorical, you know. And then that was very interesting to me, because I thought, like, you know, we would win the Davis Cup and I would feel so much, you know, love, and I don't know, like, I would be in a different planet or something. But that never really happened. We just won, like, okay, we kind of celebrated, but then, you know, nothing happened. My life didn't change that much. So and I think a lot of times when people chase their goals and when they achieve them, they're like, you know, it's a little bit anticlimactic, and then you realize, like, okay, well, now I need a new goal. So I think the journey and the chase is much more important than the actual getting it.
Got it. What was your point of view about the French frogs on the tour? Were you considering us French? How are you considering us? Because compared to the Russians, we are known not to be that mentally strong, for example. You guys usually fight a bit harder, deeper. What was your point of view about that?
I mean, I would argue that we fight. I mean, I think we fight ourselves more than anyone else. But that happens, I think, with a lot of people. But I think it's also like it's a bit of a stereotype, like French, like they give up easy, and yeah. You know, but that goes all the way, like, listen, from World War II, whatever. Like, it's a stupid stereotype, you know, like all Americans eat hamburgers, Russians are always drunk, French are eating frogs, and I don't know, Spanish have siestas all the time. So, you know, I think I try not to stereotype people too much because I think it's dangerous when you start doing that. But I've had good relationship with pretty much all the French guys. I've actually, I think, like a lot of U.S. guys were kind of like staying kind of closer to each other. Spanish guys are always like kind of keeping together. I mean, all sort of, you know, French guys kind of hang out together, but I've had really good relationships with a lot of French players. I mean, Nicolas Mahut, Gilles Simon, Tonga, Gaël Monfils, Gasquet. Gasquet is kind of like, he's the quieter one that I haven't really kind of talked so much with. But yeah, I mean, Julien Beneteau, and pretty much just all the guys, like, they're super nice, well, to me. But again, I didn't have that many enemies. I think they were more or less, like Roger Vaseline as well. I think they're just more acceptable of my sense of humor, because I think for a lot of people my sense of humor can be a little too aggressive. So I think they were not as offended by my attempted sense of humor. Like someone can call it lack of humor, but anyway, my perception of what funny is matches with the French guys fairly well.
Are you still in touch with Marat Safin?
Not really. I mean, we don't. I think I see Igor Andreev because simply he's coaching on WTA as well, so I see him quite a bit. I mean, you know, we chat with some players that are working, but no, we don't stay touch. Like, I mean, again, I haven't been in Moscow in so long that I was there maybe like a week. No, not even. Like, in Moscow, I was only like for 2 days in the last year and a half. And then in St. Petersburg, I was for 1 week for a tournament. So I'm not there that much. I mean, maybe if I was there more, then we would hang out. But yeah, I think I kind of like everyone's sort of doing their own thing, so we don't really stay in touch so much.
So now you're coaching Emma Raducanu. So you're still traveling on the tour. How do you do to build a family being out there all the time?
Yeah, well, so that's the thing, is that I was sort of stopping because I felt like, you know what, I'm investing so much time, energy, finances into trying to stay on tour. And, you know, if you're top 100, okay, yeah, you can make a good living. I mean, you're investing your energy, obviously, and your training, and so you have your expenses, but you still have the good income relative to what you're spending, so it makes sense. But then once you start dropping in rankings, you can't really sustain that much anymore, and then it's like, okay, well, I'm 34, and how long am I planning to, you know, work like a dog, and then, you know, have a zero at the end, you know, so. So I didn't really feel like investing into, you know, risk financials anymore. And then, like, I was frankly, you know, I just felt like I'm 34 years old. I've done nothing but tennis, and, you know, I felt like I can't do this for, you know, another 4 years. And like, okay, what's the point? Like, I have to have an exit strategy of some kind. So I thought, like, okay, maybe I'll stop traveling. You know, I'll see my mom a little bit more, because, you know, when I was younger, like, I left to US when I was 12 and a half. So for like 9 years, I only saw her like for 3 weeks out of those 9 years. So
where did you practice in the US?
In California. So I thought, like, okay, maybe I'll spend a little bit more time with my mom, because, you know, she's getting older and she hasn't seen me for pretty much most of my life. So then I was like, okay, now it's time to start working. And I couldn't really figure out what to do on you know, off the tour. So I was like, okay, so it's logical for me. Plus, I enjoy coaching. That's kind of, that's a sad part of it, is that I enjoy coaching, but you need to travel for that. So it's a little bit easier for me to travel, but of course, yeah, like it's, if you're traveling for, you know, 40 weeks a year at least, then there's not a whole lot of family or home time. So the only way you can do it is by taking the family with you. So if someone can manage to do that, but again, you know, if you have young kids, they have to go to school. So, like, you know, it's, again, it's, it becomes a logistical problem. So yeah, so it's difficult. And I think that's why a lot of times players have these difficulties finding good coaches, because, you know, it's like a good coach will want to travel maybe 20-30 weeks a year, and the bad ones, or like young ones that don't have a family, are willing to travel but they don't have the experience. And so it's like, you know, it's very hard to get the right mix, you know, someone has experience, someone that is able to travel, someone is willing to deal with all the BS that, you know, 19, 20-year-olds come up with. You know, it's like basically you're like becoming a parent in some way. Because it's not just coaching. I mean, if you think that it's just forehands and backhands, but a lot of times it's like just reminding a player to bring an extra pair of shoes, or like, okay, why didn't you string the rackets? Or like, where are your rackets? Oh, you left your rackets at home. Or like, oh, you're, you know, like you forgot to enter into a tournament. And so, yeah, so there's a lot of stuff behind the kind of like background stuff that you know, everyone thinks tennis is so professional, but I mean, sometimes like just the mistakes that rookies do, or they're just funny.
How did you get in touch with Emma to start your
I didn't
collaboration?
So her agent got in touch with me, I think it's actually a better way of, honestly, I think it's better if the player approaches, not the coach, because I think ultimately it's the player that needs help, not, you know, if the coach approaches the player, then it's harder to figure out, is it the coach that needs the job, or is the player that needs the coach? And yeah, nowadays it's changed quite a bit. Players are, you know, they're the bosses, and so it changes the dynamic, the working dynamic. So I think it's not a good thing, because a 19-year-old sometimes doesn't even know how to book a flight ticket. So how can they decide how to structure a working relationship with someone? So in that sense, I think it's not very good, but. You know, it is the way it is. So
she's had 10 coaches in 1 year. is it stressful for you to be in the position, not to know what's going on 1 week after another? How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, 10 would be like a little exaggeration, but yeah, so that's what everyone sort of knows. Like, if ever anyone asks about like Emma Raducanu, like, do you know her? Like, oh yeah, she's the girl who had like tons of coaches. So yeah, so it's obviously not a good reputation to have. But you know, I've mentioned it even before. Like one of the first things I said to her agent and her coach, I said like, listen, well, you know, you have a reputation for this, and it's like, it has been happening, so like obviously we need to address that, or we need to discuss that, because, you know, nobody wants to be in a situation that's not very stable. And you know, I liked her explanation of you know, the fact that, you know, she hasn't been able to find someone that she truly connects with. And I respect that, because as a player, I didn't travel sometimes with coaches simply because I could not find the right voice. You know, I didn't feel like the connection was with, you know, with Joe, or, you know, whatever, Brian. But then with someone, you feel like you have a good connection, and you feel like they understand your game and they understand you as a player. And so that's, you know, ultimately you want to have a coach that sort of understands where you're coming from. It's a little easier to connect. Some of the things you don't have to explain. Because also as a young player, a lot of times they're not very good at giving the information, you know, like giving a feedback. They can't explain their own feelings. They don't even understand sometimes what's going on. Like they're not they don't understand if they're scared or if they're angry. You know, it's like a little kid who's learning about emotions, and so they're going through a very, very high learning curve. And if you don't really feel the player, like as a coach, if you don't understand what they're going through, it's sometimes hard to coach. You know, it's I think a lot of times parents have that problem when they're trying to coach, is because they don't understand where the player is coming from. Like the player says, like, I'm scared or I'm afraid, and they're like, oh, why are you afraid? Like you know, they don't understand that because they haven't really played themselves. So yes, I think it helps to have a good connection with someone, and so you know, when that explanation makes sense to me, and it makes sense to me how, again, I think a lot of other players go through, you know, through coaches, but it's just not very, we don't hear about it. But you know, with Emma, I think the fact that, you know, she changed right after she won US Open, I think that was just very sort of, everyone saw it or everyone heard about it. But I guess there's a valid reason. It's not like she decided, like, oh, okay, you know what, I win the tournament and now you're fired. Like, it wasn't like that. There was a lot of, you know, I think the coach couldn't travel as well. So it's not like he got fired. They kind of had an agreement for a certain period. So it's just, anyway.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's from that end, like, you know, obviously she explained that part, but also the thing is that ultimately, listen, I've gotten fired already twice, and you know what, I'm not scared of being fired. Like, if ultimately I know I have information that I can provide, and if player wants this information, I'm there. If the player doesn't want this information,
I'm still there.
You know, it's fine. I'm like, it's okay. I've been jobless before, so I know how to survive, and I think it gives me a little bit more strength. I think the more, it's like a message to you, the more you fire me, the stronger I get. So I think in that sense, I'm, you know, if she fires me tomorrow, okay, it's her decision. Okay, like, I might not like it, I might not agree with it, but ultimately I'm gonna survive. Like, I'm not gonna cry too much about it.
Okay, Emma, so you can like the video and share.
Please don't fire me.
How's your connection?
I mean, I think she's a really good. I mean, I was actually surprised because I didn't know her. So I really like her. I mean, she's a great person. She's smart. She works hard. You know, obviously, like, we all have our own things, you know, every player has their own quirks and character traits, and sometimes, you know, players can be stubborn or you know, hard to coach, but you know, you're not going to get a perfect player, but I think she's a really good person. I really like her, so it makes it a little bit easier for me. You know, whether things change or not, who knows, but for now I'm not complaining about anything.
I've been seeing you playing on court. You don't necessarily leash your shoes. You don't need it.
No. So this is just a very good shoe.
She plays too slow for you.
No. It's so this shoe, it has like a built-in kind of a sock. So it's pretty. It's actually, that's why I like it, because you can put it on and off, and you don't have to lace it. Of course, like, if I had to play a match, I would probably just lace it up. But yeah, I mean, for now, she hasn't gotten to the level to make me lace my shoes. So.
Not the message to you, Emma.
This is like, you know, like in old movies, like martial arts, where, you know, the teacher is like fighting his student, and then like loses to the student, and he says, like, you're ready. It's like, she's not ready yet.
Yeah. The cool thing is that when I see you playing, you look like you look like a kid. You look like you still like it like a kid. Is that the case? You look like you're really actually playing tennis.
Now I think I enjoy it a little bit more because it's not my job anymore. But I don't play very often. Yeah.
I got lucky here in Porto Rose then.
Yeah. No, but also like, you know, I've with Annette I was hitting quite a bit, with Arena I was hitting quite a bit until she wanted to get a sparring partner. So with Emma, like I'm hitting with her for now. You know, if she feels like I'm not good enough for hitting anymore, then she'll maybe get a sparring partner. But for now, I think it's good. Plus, you know, when you hit with a player, you actually feel a bit like what's happening with their shots. You feel like, okay, you're not really hitting. You know, like, yeah, you're making a lot of sound, and but the ball is not really pushing you. So yes, I like to hit. You know, and I don't mind hitting. I don't mind running a bit.
What about the hairs? They were short when you stopped. What happened? Last question.
Yeah, man, stopped making money. So now it's you know.
Saving. Not much.
Saving. Yeah. Yeah, no. I'm
because. Did the girl like it more like that? That your choice?
Actually, I've been getting a lot of complaints, but which is, I guess, is what makes me like want to keep it longer. Cause, like, that means I'm doing something right. If the girls are complaining, that means I'm doing right. yeah, like if I cut it, I'll never get it long again. So I'm like, I don't know. I don't.
All right.
I'm not like Tinder doesn't work anymore for me. So it's like. What?
Okay, thanks for your time. It was a cool chat. 3 days running after you, but we made it. Thanks for it.
Yeah, no problem.
Wish you the best for the tournament, the rest of the season, and I don't know, the future.
All right, thanks.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Thanks.